How Bhattacharya's NIH is rethinking China, DEI, and high-risk labs. For decades, scientists have looked at the National Institutes of Health as an agency that publishes papers, according to Dr. J. Bhattacharya. Under President Donald Trump's second term, the emphasis for NIH funding has shifted to provable, testable hypotheses, not ideological narratives, he said, which is resulting in widespread reforms to the agency. Bhattacharya, who obtained both a doctorate in economics and a medical degree from Stanford University within 3 years of each other, outlined changes that the NIH has implemented in his first year as the agency's director and talked about his vision for the next 3 years in an interview with Epoch Times senior editor Jan Jikulek. The NIH has been instrumental in medical advances for decades, Bhattacharya said, but in the 21st century, it became much more of a state institution, not willing to take intellectual risks. During the same time, the agency was willing to take risks on dangerous gain-of-function and other social agendas, like DEI, that it had no business really engaging in. I think the NIH now, under my leadership, under President Trump's leadership, and under what Secretary Kennedy is looking over, is focused on actually addressing the chronic health problems of this country, reversing the flatlining of life expectancy, and making good on its mission, research that improves the health and longevity of the American people, and the whole world, he said. One of the 13 agencies managed by the Department of Health and Human Services, the NIH is the largest supporter of biomedical research globally, providing 85% of all biomedical research funding worldwide, according to Bhattacharya. It funds about $50 billion in scientific research via grants to hundreds of thousands of researchers at academic institutions and hospitals, he said. The NIH is not an agency that makes decisions or policies about public health directly, Bhattacharya said, noting that he intends to remove the politicization of science that has existed for decades. Political agendas. Over the past 15 to 20 years, the NIH has incorporated political rather than scientific agendas, Bhattacharya told the Epoch Times. Probably the most prominent example of this is DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, he said. If you were a researcher outside the NIH, the ticket to getting sort of extra, relatively easy funds was to promise to do DEI research. Looking into it, much of that research had no real scientific basis at all. I don't even characterize this as science. As an example, Bhattacharya used a project that studied the question, is structural racism the root reason why African Americans have worse hypertension results than other races? The problem with that hypothesis is that there's no way to test it, he said. If structural racism is the cause, then what control group can you have to test the idea that that is true? None of that actually translated over to better health for anybody, much less for African Americans. Scientists of the country understand that if they want NIH support, they need to propose projects that have the chance of improving the health of people rather than achieving some ideology that should not belong at the NIH. The NIH has redirected its funding since Trump took office for his second term. That includes allocating funds for early career scientists, Bhattacharya said. Funding changes. There should be fundamental changes with the way the NIH funds educational institutions, Bhattacharya said, and he intends to work with Congress to make happen. On January 5th, a federal appeals court ruled that the Trump administration cannot reduce the amount of money the NIH pays grant recipients for indirect costs, including administration and facility maintenance. The ruling applies to three lawsuits filed by the Attorneys General of Massachusetts and 21 other states, as well as hospitals, schools, and the associations that represent them. The NIH published a guidance document in February 2025 to limit how much grant funding could flow to research institutions to cover their indirect costs. These are costs that cannot be directly attributed to an individual research project and include expenses related to funding equipment, facilities, and research staff. The guidance document states that these indirect costs could not exceed 15% of funding for direct research costs, regardless of the costs incurred at universities. The NIH stated that Johns Hopkins, Yale, and Harvard charged in excess of 60% for indirect costs, even though they had billions of dollars in endowments. Attorneys for those who filed suit said small universities don't have such large endowments and that if the guidance took effect, there would be many layoffs, stalled clinical trials, and laboratory closures. If you don't have amazing scientists who can win the grants, you're not going to get the facility support. But in order to attract excellent scientists to your institution, you have to have excellent facilities. It's the kind of catch-22 that guarantees that our funding from the NIH is going to be concentrated in relatively few institutions, Bhattacharya said. Scientists at schools such as the University of Alabama, the University of Oklahoma, and the University of Kansas deserve access to funding like Stanford and Harvard, he said. Dealing with China. The NIH must be very careful about how we fund research relationships with China, especially post-pandemic, Bhattacharya said. The U.S. invested in the Chinese biomedical research enterprise. Almost every single top Chinese biomedical research scientist of note was funded in some part by the NIH. Many were trained in the United States, so we invested heavily in that, he said. Post-pandemic, and especially given the geopolitical circumstances we are in now, it looks, in retrospect, like it wasn't all that wise an investment. The NIH must implement more secure measures with foreign research, he said, referencing the collaboration with the Wuhan Institute of Virology. In the case of Wuhan, what happened was that the NIH funded EcoHealth Alliance, which had a subaward relationship with the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Bhattacharya said. When the pandemic happened, and the NIH had an interest in getting the lab notebooks of what exactly was studied in Wuhan, the EcoHealth Alliance essentially delayed reporting at all about what it knew had happened, Bhattacharya said. They ultimately said, oh, well, we don't control Wuhan Institute of Virology. We can't get the lab notebooks. He noted that the NIH funded research in collaboration with China that was actually quite dangerous and may indeed have led to the pandemic. Under Bhattacharya, the NIH now has more stringent auditing processes with domestic and foreign institutions. If it is NIH-funded, then have to have direct auditing relationships united with the NIH, he said. Then the NIH can shut off money to the foreign institution if it's not cooperating. It's called a sub-project system. It's one of the first things that I did. Located in Bethesda, Maryland, the NIH includes 27 institutes focused on various aspects of health, including the National Cancer Institute, the National Institute of Mental Health, and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which was previously headed by Dr. Anthony Fauci. NIH research is now being evaluated based on how well it contributes to solving chronic disease issues, according to Bhattacharya. The agency receives roughly 100,000 applications every year from scientists around the world, and it can fund 8,000 to 10,000, he said. Gain-of-function research. Bhattacharya addressed concerns about dangerous pathogenic enhancement, referred to as gain-of-function research. On August 7, 2025, Trump signed an executive order that was aimed at federal grant spending, seeking to tighten parameters to receive approval for such grants and subject grant award decisions to evaluation by executive appointees. In a fact sheet, the White House stated that, moving forward, federal grants will undergo more rigorous evaluation by Trump's appointed officials to verify that each grant dollar benefits Americans instead of lining grantees' pocketbooks or furthering causes that damage America. Federal grants in the past have been used to support dangerous, harmful projects that undermine national security and fundamental rights, the fact sheet states. The White House referenced the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which was funded in part by the NIH, stating that it was the most likely source of the COVID-19 pandemic. NIH funds were used to fund gain-of-function research. The idea that you could go out into the wild places, the bat caves of southern China and elsewhere, pull all of the pathogens of the earth into labs, manipulate them in there, and then figure out which ones are the most likely to make the leap into human populations to cause a pandemic, it's absolute fantasy and it has ended altogether in this administration, Bhattacharya said during a February 4 roundtable. Bhattacharya's COVID-19 actions. An outspoken critic of measures implemented during the COVID-19 pandemic, Bhattacharya first drew public attention in 2020 for his criticism of interventions such as mask mandates, lockdowns, and school closures. In their Great Barrington Declaration, Bhattacharya and two other doctors advocated for focused protection of vulnerable people while allowing low-risk groups to resume normal activities. Within days of its release, Francis S. Collins, then head of the NIH, wrote to Fauci, saying that he hoped for a quick and devastating takedown of the document written by people whom he called fringe epidemiologists. During Kennedy's presidential campaign, he emphasized the importance of addressing what he called the corporate capture of government agencies and the need for greater transparency. Bhattacharya said he will focus on both issues in his role. He would like to create a website to allow the public to search for researchers and find any funding they received from pharmaceutical companies over a period of time, much like OpenSecrets.org but for physicians. If you have an idea that comes out of the NIH, and then a pharmaceutical company uses that idea to make a product that improves the health outcomes or cure some disease, that's not a bad thing in and of itself, Bhattacharya said. The bad thing is, when you have researchers who have conflicts of interest and don't report them, people don't know about them. I think once you understand what the funding structures are for any particular researcher, then you understand what the conflicts of interest are. You do want to understand, when you are reading some piece of research, was it funded by a pharmaceutical company, or other entities?